first lecture is Laszlo Péter, who is an electrochemist, doctor of the academy, and he graduated as a teacher of physics and chemistry. He had his PhD at 95 and had some postdoctoral experience at the University of Texas at Austin. And this lecture is somewhat related to his is being a visiting scientist at Hitachi Research Laboratory in 1997-98. And since then, he's at the Wigner Center for Physics and his predecessors. And he has been active in electrochemistry and electrodeposition of magnetic nanostructures. And he is a distinguished scientist in electrochemistry in Hungary, and he is the head of the Electrochemistry Society of the Academy of Sciences. So, Laszlo, please tell us about lithium-ion batteries. The title is an introduction, Electrochemistry, Structure and Function. Please.
Okay, so thank you for the nice introduction. Laszlo told me more than what I deserve, so I will skip a large part of my introduction, and just for sake of easiness, I will stop sharing my video to focus on the presentation itself. So welcome everyone who came across the corridor, who came across the continent. Welcome to the seminar. And I will speak about lithium-ion batteries at the very introductory level, so that people dealing with neutron science and electrochemistry should start to speak the very same language. I am from the Wigner Research Center, which is a very large unit in our campus, KFKI. I have been working here since I returned to Hungary after my postdoctoral years. This is the short summary of my vocational history, what Laszlo Botyán also listed, which is highlighted in this slide. My lithium ion battery experience comes from a very prestigious research laboratory, Hitachi in Japan. This was one of my postdoctoral period, which is a very, very nice city at the Pacific coast of Honshu Island. And when at the time I was there, it was a rise of the lithium ion battery at Hitachi City. I was a member of a maybe 60 people team who was developing such devices. I have some experience with applied projects, also we are a basic research center. So I ran many, one of them, number four, together with Laszlo Rosta, who may remember really well the joint work on the electrolytic production of some neutron mirror devices. Okay. What is more important, the history of batteries. So it dates back to 220 years from now on, where Volta discovered the first battery. Very interestingly, the first key experiments related to the exploitation of the electrochemical phenomena happened very shortly after the discovery of this Volta column. In the same year, the first electrolysis experiment took place, and within 5 years, we had the first electroplated coating on silver metal. Concerning the history of the batteries and power sources, you can see that the fuel cells, interestingly, came before such many important devices than lead acid batteries, Le Clanchet cell, and lithium cadmium nickel batteries. In the 19th century, the discovery of the major parts or batteries could be easily linked to some great personalities who played an important role in electrochemistry. In the 20th century, as time passed, it became rather a work of a larger team, which worked with some predefined goals. Some little word about convention. People at the battery field often speak about anode and cathode, and this is theoretically related to the current anode is negative, cathode is positive, and we speak about them with the cell operation, so not cell charging when it is just the opposite, but with the cell operation. The lithium ion battery history is fairly short as opposed to the entire battery history. The first battery composed of lithium and some lithium iodide was commercialized in 1972, and for a while lithium metal was one of the electrodes of these batteries. Only the positive electrode changed, and then 20 years after the introduction of the first lithium battery, started the work with the carbon type negative electrodes, which came some very dominant element of the rechargeable battery market nowadays. And thereafter, there was some development in both types of electrode, and the field is really diverse by now. Okay, so why are lithium ion batteries are so important for us? This is a very common diagram, the type of which is often seen in the relevant literature. So here you can see some volumetric capacity, where you can see here and the other axis at a weight normalized capacity, energy in both terms. And the conventional lead acid batteries are low in both parameters. And the various types of lithium batteries are like a high energy density, high power density devices. This can be said also about the other type of diagram where the weight and size are compared. So the advantage factors related to energy density is the small comes from the very small molar weight of the lithium, and the storage criteria is less demanding than devices working with elemental hydrogen as a power source, because the hydrogen storage is still a problem nowadays, unlike for the component of the lithium ion battery. So for the lithium, this is a very light element, very unstable in aqueous media. However, since its electrode, standard electrode potential is very negative, very high voltages can be achieved with a cell. The key of the success of the lithium ion batteries is that a single cell operation is feasible for handheld electronic devices working with classical semiconductors. So you don't need multiple cell arrangement. If you operate a car or a motorcycle, you have many cell batteries, lead acid batteries, as the starting power source. And once one cell is erroneous in this stack of cells, you can trash the entire set of the cells. Unlike for lithium ion batteries, where this voltage is suitable for a single cell operation of semiconductor devices. Another important technological factor behind the success is the so-called rocking chair type operation of the batteries. I will tell a lot about this later. This lands like memory effect-free operation of the cells. This is very important as comparison with the nickel-cadmium batteries. Toxicity, it's a very important issue since the lithium-ion battery is totally void of any heavy metal element. Sometimes in the positive electrode you can find some, but still cobalt or manganese is not like cadmium or lead. Okay, the self-discharge is very important. It's a very low self-discharge device as compared to other type of batteries. Concerning the disadvantages, the presence of flammable components and the necessity of the perfect sealing is a very important factor. When we trash some used lithium-ion battery, or when it undergoes a deep discharge, the regeneration capability is fairly weak. So we have to keep in mind that we have strong limits for battery operation. This list is pretty general for batteries. Listing all the necessary parts concerning the operation and the technical feasibility of the device. I will skip some and will speak about, most importantly, the key parameters or the key materials of the lithium-ion batteries, and will put less emphasis on the rest. So let's speak about the conventional lithium-ion battery cathodes. For rocking chair type batteries, this is usually a compound of some transition metal. This is a host structure which can uptake or release lithium ions. And the key factor in the operation is the change in the oxidation state of this transition metal element. So when lithium is taken up, then this is reduced. When the reaction takes place to the other reaction and this metal ion is oxidized. Here you can see some example for various type of cathode components. And here in the next columns, you can see the nominal voltage ranges, charging limits, and the charge and discharge rates. For battery industry, this charge rate is defined with a special unit. So this NC means that the process is carried out with one over N hours. So say 2C means that you can charge the device over half an hour. Okay, the target would be like 10C. So you can fully charge the device within say 6 minutes. But this is extremely fast, and it is practically never realized in really working devices. Concerning the cathode material types, for the introduction of the lithium ion battery technology, this titanium disulfide was the first one which could uptake lithium ions without changing the host structure. Okay, please mute yourself, if I may ask.
Can you do it? Mute all.
Okay, I'm looking for the mute all, but I cannot see that. So I just kindly ask other people to mute temporarily. Okay, so this was the first one. Where the potential range was fairly little, and you can see as the cathode materials developed, we went higher and higher in this diagram for larger potentials for the positive electrode material versus the lithium plus lithium zero redox pair. Here in the bottom corner at the right hand side, you can see graphite. Okay, graphite is not the positive electrode component, but the negative electrode component. So you can see that since the negative electrode is operated in this range, the total voltage of the lithium ion battery is at least half a volt less than the operation voltage of these materials with this lithium-lithium ion scale. This range here, however, is the stability of the electrolyte solution contacting with both electrodes. You can see that this range comprises the positive electrode materials, but the negative electrode material is out of this range. So when I tell you something about graphite, I will tell you again some operation criteria in the instable region. Okay, so you have a positive electrode. It is not just a standalone material, but you have to embed it into an environment. So for an electrical lead, you need a current collector. This is aluminum. It's a corrodable material, but at least light. The cathode layer is not merely composed of the transition metal oxide or phosphate material. It can range up to like 85-90% of the active cathode material. And there are other materials present. One is a binder. So this is a powdery material, what you have to fix very tightly to the current collector. So you need a binder. And also the interparticle electrical conductance between a transition metal, lithiated transition metal oxide particle is not very good. So you need an electrical conductor, which is a carbon powder. So you can see that a cathode layer, whose thickness ranges some hundreds of micrometers, is a very complicated mixed material. And if you need to study a full electrode, then all of them has some role. While the granularity of the component is very important, since it is in the micrometer range, so it is by far not a bulk material, but there's a very highly dispersed material. Concerning the anode, the first solution was, of course, the metallic lithium. But this metallic lithium has a very serious drawback, which is highlighted with this scheme. See the upper row of the sketches. If you have a lithium metal with a current collector and the lithium charge-discharge takes place several times, the process is reversible in the sense of chemistry, but it is highly irreversible in the sense of morphology, which means that lithium dendrites tend to grow on the negative electrode, and these needles sooner or later puncture through the interlayers between the two electrodes. This can reach the other electrode, the positive electrode, and this is a short circuit and your device is practically dead. So there are some nanotechnological solutions already available nowadays to overcome such difficulties, but still the reintroduction of the lithium metal itself for batteries is just on the lab scale level, and it can be applied for like lithium sulfur batteries, but those who are operated in your mobile phone still cannot use this technology. So in order to overcome the drawback of the lithium dendrite growth with the metallic lithium, that became possible with the introduction of carbonaceous materials as anode materials. Carbon can be a lithium host, since this graphitic structure can be slightly displaced by the intercalation of the lithium atoms, and lithium atoms can the lithium concentration of these graphitic materials can be as high that lithium carbon 6 composition is the one of the highest lithium content. So this means that you have a fixed structure, and lithium intercalation, deintercalation takes place upon the charging and operation of the cells. And since you have a fixed host structure, there is no lithium metal formation, which means that you don't need, you don't grow dendrites at all. And the short circuit danger of the lithium ion batteries with carbonaceous anode materials is practically the minimum. Again, the negative electrode layer is not pure carbon, but it is composed with a binder equally to the other material. The Kallet corrector is different. It's copper. It is like heavier and more expensive, but you cannot use aluminum, unlike for the positive electrode, because lithium is alloyed to aluminum, and the application of any other metal for current collector that can be alloyed with lithium would lead to a great lithium loss, irreversibility, and again dendrite formation. So that's what you have for your negative electrode. And here comes a very special chapter in the entire story, which points to the very controversial nature of the lithium-ion batteries. So the electrolyte solutions or the solvents are not stable in the potential range where either lithium metal itself or lithium intercalated carbon would work as an electrode. The very lucky point is that once you start operating such a device, you produce a so-called solid electrolyte interface. This abbreviation SEI is very common in the lithium ion battery research. This means that once you start charging a device, you yourself produce in situ this solid electrolyte interface, which whose thickness can range to up to a few tens of nanometers. It is a material morphologically very conformal to the shape of the carbonaceous anode, and it is a decomposition product of the solvent and the solute. It is composed of various lithium-containing phases, either organic or inorganic materials. And this layer becomes a very tiny ion-selective permeation layer for lithium ions. So lithium can be transferred without the solid electrolyte interface, without a large energy barrier. However, at the same time, this layer kinetically hinders the reduction of the further components of the electrolyte solution. Of course, since you yourself produce such a solid electrolyte layer within the cell upon the first operation, this is related to an energy density loss and also an irreversible charge capacity loss at the very beginning of your operation. However, thereafter, the cell can be operated very stably. So, whichever type of component is introduced into a lithium-ion battery, a solid electrolyte interface with good functionality has to be formed so that the entire lithium-ion battery becomes feasible. Okay, let's take a look at the entire cell. So you can see that you have a positive electrode with an transition metal oxide with some lithium ions intercalated, making a very involved crystal structure. And then you have a negative electrode with the carbonaceous materials with these graphitic planes between which you can have lithium metal like atoms intercalated. So the one key factor is that for the good operation is that for the charge, lithium ions is released here and lithium is uptaken here, while for the discharge or separation, this is just the opposite, which means that the composition of the media between the two electrodes does not need to change at all upon the cell operation. This is highly in contrast to either lead acid batteries or nickel cadmium batteries, which is accompanied with a very strong change in the media between the two electrodes. So if you operate a car, you may remember that the charge discharge state of the lead acid battery can be rated with the density of the sulfuric acid within the cell. This is totally untrue for lithium ion batteries, since the composition of the media is unchanged. Another very important structural point is that there is no phase formation during either the charge or the discharge of the component. While nickel cadmium batteries has a very heavy memory effect is because the cell charge or cell discharge leads to either a formation or the disappearance of some phases. And the formation of a phase is always accompanied with some irreversibility. There is an activation energy for phase formation, which can be translated to electrochemistry as an overvoltage. And this overvoltage is completely missing from lithium ion batteries. And this is one of the key factors why lithium ion batteries could become so successful. Okay, so this was the electrode part, but there is something in between. It can be an ionic, a media with very high ionic conductivity. Okay, if you remember the classical lead acid batteries, you can see flowing the sulfuric acid between the two electrodes. For technical reason, when you have a compact battery, should it be either a classical Leclanché cell or with a lithium ion battery, you need a separator between the two electrodes, which means that they are kept mechanically apart from each other. But this spacer has to be like porous, which can be saturated with the electrolyte solution in between. And it can be like a mechanical spacer, but otherwise inactive material. For lithium ion batteries, this is a porous polyethylene foil in most of the cases. And the solution contains very special components to which even chemists are not always very familiar. One of the key components is the solvents. For most of the batteries, some organic carbonates can be found solvent components. So since lithium is a very, very active, reactive metal, neither alcoholic nor carboxylate groups are allowed. Instead, like oxygen atoms are fully bent to the carbon atoms can be here, can be seen in these formulas. So these are organic carbonate like dimethyl carbonate or ethylene carbonate. Interestingly, not all carbonates are suitable since propylene carbonate for some reason is co-intercalated with lithium. So this is a degradation factor whether the solvent can be co-intercalated to the carbonaceous material. When I was in Hitachi City, the major part of the experiment took place with the highly fluorinated type of solvents. Unlike the classical solvents composed of carbon, oxygen, and hydrogen only. Here you can see a very highly fluorinated chain, which means that this solvent, being very good solvent for lithium salts and retaining the high polarity, it is not flammable at all. So it is much safer for operation. And for modern solvents for lithium batteries, there are more and more components like this, which differ a lot from classical solvents. Recently, the experimental direction includes the so-called ionic liquids. This is an ionic material composed of large ions of irregular shape and very low inclination to crystallization due to the high, large size and the shape incompatibility of the cation and anions. And this is an all-ion liquid material, though very high viscosity and low transport, lazy transport properties. So this means that the battery can be composed of ionic liquids only. There are some water sensitive or water insensitive hydrophilic, hydrophobic ionic liquids too. If we apply classical solvent, we need salts that lead the charge in the solution. The early solution was to apply some very simple lithium salts, tetrafluoroborate, hexafluorophosphate, or even carbonate. The disadvantage of these compounds is the high moisture and oxygen sensitivity. Some alternatives were introduced around 2000. Here, this is a fairly large anion with extremely low reactivity. This perfluoros alkyl sulfonyl imides make like one family of the salt that can be very stable for lithium ion batteries and exhibit much lower water and oxygen sensitivity than the classical salts. And this is just a very compressed list. In the literature, you can find dozens of others that can be tested for various applications. Okay, I'm trying to page. Okay, so this is just a highlight. If you have the full battery, there is a set of layers and a lot of materials involved. And if you have a coin type cell, the weight of the active materials in the entire cell can be much less than 1 gram. So if you would like to study that in situ, you encounter a big challenge to detect a minor amount of material on or the neighborhood of a very minor amount of material, while a lot of others are present too. Okay, this is just a highlight for some experimental coin type cells. When I was involved in the lithium ion battery research, the home devices to construct such coin type cells were not available, so we had a larger set of plates attached to each other with some screws, nuts and bolts. But nowadays you can use home devices by which you can construct your coin type battery by yourself. When you operate a test cell, you usually don't have this reference electrode. So if you buy a CR2032 type battery in the market, you will never find this lead. This is very beneficial when you would like to get information separately from the anode and the cathode, and then you have a fixed potential point, a reference point in the system that makes it easier to rate the deviation, the potential deviation of which electrode is the limiting factor of the battery operation. But for having such a point, you need to make like extra effort as opposed to the commercial ones. Just the major message of this cell, this slide is that in access to the indispensable functional elements, there are other structural materials involved that would not make really easy to reach the interesting zones of the cell and to make either in situ or ex situ study of the layers involved in an operationable lithium battery. A few words about the lab environment of the lithium ion battery research. One prerequisite is that absolutely dry environment is necessary. There are various types of glove boxes available in the market. The most compact ones are like incubator, like plexiglass dry boxes. However, the ceiling of these simple devices is clearly insufficient for battery research, and they usually do not contain a so-called ant chamber, a lock through which you can insert and remove components, devices, or chemicals without poisoning the environment with either vapor or oxygen. So the technical requirement is pretty strong. So the oxygen and water level should be below like 10 ppm. And since lithium can react with nitrogen too, the argon atmosphere is highly required. An investment, an initial investment cost of such devices is some 10,000 of euro. And if you order like through-wall electrical connections, which is indispensable for charge-discharge operation, some can be go even higher. Depending on the space required in the lab, it goes from desktop configuration to standalone units. This is a multiple unit glove box line in a laboratory, so it can look like that. And also the operation cost of this unit is not negligible, since you have to buy a lot of argon gas in tanks. You have to change the water adsorbents, filters. Also, gloves can degrade time by time. And there are renewable components, even if the ceiling along the plexiglass window is perfect. And this is a 724 operation, so you cannot stop it. The electronic control units measuring the atmosphere peculiarities have to be operated with no stop. So there is a constant circulation in the atmosphere and filtering it through water absorbent and the removal of the impurities. Okay, this is a different view of the same devices. Here you can see an ant chamber. This is the open one. So once you would like to insert something in the glove box, you have to put it in the ant chamber, evacuate it completely so that there is no vapor or oxygen impurity released into the cell. Then you fill it up with argon, and then you can open the internal door of the ant chamber. The reverse direction is easier. You can evacuate it again, fill it with argon, opening the internal door, putting something to here, and closing the internal door and remove it. So this is this lock type operation, which is absolutely necessary. And once you would like to take out a device for putting it to the neutron beam, you always have to play the same game with your specimen. Concerning the electrical part, the charging discharging unit are typically multi-channel electrical devices with computer independent data acquisition and storage capability. So they are operated with an uninterrupted power supply, and you have a computer linked to them, and time by time you read out the data collected, and they can be programmed, and after programming they can work like self-standing units. But for a complete evaluation, you definitely need the computer connections. The price heavily depends on the voltage and current range of the devices, and also to the number of channels. And there are additional parts required, like cell holders, cabling, cell assembly kits, and a lot of other auxiliary devices to operate experimental cells routinely and a large number in parallel. Some other important point, I spoke already about the charge discharge rate. For discharge rate in everyday devices and portable electronic is pretty small, since you never charge up your mobile phone twice a day, maybe once. However, with other devices, with more power than your mobile phone, the charging target rates is 2C. For long text experiment, the charging time is between 2 and 5 hours, and the number of the charging discharging cycles that a device has to undergo for the long-term rating differs on the scale of the development. So the preliminary is between some 50 and 200. The medium range is already in the 1000 level, and a real life cycle estimation includes thousands or even 10,000s of charging and discharging cycles, and these require time. And also the identification of the degradation mechanisms and the peculiarities of the degradation points for such long operations is a key factor, a key parameter for the improvement of lithium-ion batteries. In this slide, I listed some preliminary work that my colleagues already performed for materials that are suitable for lithium-ion batteries. These included a complex structural and numerical simulation investigation of the conduction mechanism of these materials. Sorry. However, I must say that all these previous studies were performed ex situ, not with real lithium-ion batteries, or not experimental batteries, but with the materials, the raw materials to be applied in lithium-ion batteries. So we have some steps from this point to the next one. This slide lists just a few hints on what we can do for ex situ studies if we decide to start such a project. For instance, I read many papers that dealt with the formation of improved electrode materials by calcining it with carbon materials to make a more intimate contact between the lithium intercalation phase, or the lithium transition metal oxide phase, and the electrical conductor phase around them. And this calcined material perform much better than just mixed carbon powder with these materials. And it's a matter of investigation how the close atomic contacts are formed in such material, and why their performance is better. For the electrolyte solution, liquid phase diffraction can answer some question concerning the deep details of the lithium ion solvation and the conduction mechanism. And for electron active materials, we could probably learn something more about the solid electrolyte interface or the degradation mechanisms after long-term tests. And even more far away, what could be done like in situ? The question is whether it can be, we can construct at all a device that makes it possible that for in situ neutron studies, and the material selection for such an in situ investigation device is a key issue. And if you have an entire cell, well, information might come from various parts of the cell that it takes some challenge how you separate information from some various parts of the cell. So I hope there will be some people in this team who can answer questions like that. Okay?
If anyone has a question, so please put on your microphone and ask if you have one. Concerning these last questions, we probably have to wait until Misha Avdeev's answers, not the questions, but the answers, because they already have suns and diffraction and reflectivity neutron results on lithium ion batteries. So we are interested in hearing that in 1 month's time.
Okay, maybe I comment a bit. So really these questions can be answered, and I think it better to postpone it for my lecture. And
yeah, okay. I thought
everything is now possible, the work is in progress, and in addition to the methods Laszlo mentioned, we can also say there is a big progress in neutron radiography and tomography, and there are also approaches such as lithium alpha particle detection. So this is a combination of nuclear physics and the scattering methods. So a big progress. So I will tell about this in detail. My question concerning your lecture is, can you comment about the temperature effect on the electrochemical process you described? Because it is important for cold and hot countries, I think.
Well, I myself have not done temperature dependent studies of such materials. The general, I would say just some generalities, since the extension of the temperature range for such devices is a permanent pursuit. For low temperature, you have a very sluggish ionic transport in the solution, and this increase the required charging time and decrease the possible discharge rate. And also for the high temperature, the degradation and the dissolution of the binders is a prominent danger for the cell operation. But to tell the truth, I am not very familiar with the very recent times.
You mentioned that the starting infrastructure to do experiments on real systems, that means these glove boxes and continuous operation of clean spaces, is rather high. But if we restrict ourselves to relatively small devices around the neutron beam or whatever beam, is it possible, or in any case, one has to be close to some laboratory where, you know, general work has to be done. What is your opinion?
This would not require a dedicated laboratory in the sense that if you have the glove box and it is separated from the rest of the devices, there is no exchange of impurities or so. But in order to provide a well-controlled environment, you must install a glove box, even though small. So like 1 square meter lab space is the minimum, but you must have it for making the experiment like correct.
Please, colleagues, please be aware that you are heard. Okay, there is a question from Robert Schiller on the chat window. So either you can see it or I can read it. Probably he has no microphone. So the question is, has intercalating materials other than graphite been investigated? He means, for example, tungsten oxide or tungsten bronze or similar.
Yes, there are such materials and even full organic lithium ion batteries are being developed. So yes, both with metals and also with organic nitrogen containing materials, there are alternatives. Not at this moment in the commercialized lithium ion batteries, but at experimental level. Mm-hmm.
I think we will have some more answers and more examples next time from Robert Kuhn's talk, because he will talk about the newer trends, the newer development and scientific trends which were not touched so far.
So Laszlo, yes. May I have a question?
Yeah.
What is the situation of glove boxes in the KFK campus?
Well, I know several laboratories operating glove boxes with a very diverse set of experiment. And I would say if you dedicate the glove box for one type of experiment, that's okay. However, since like solvents in a lithium batteries have some non-zero vapor pressure and other materials for people dealing with a different sort of experiment also have other materials with the different vapor, the mutual contamination of these materials is not really allowed. So even though you find an operational glove box dedicated to another type of experiment, it's not really recommended that you use a glove box with various purposes. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can find some out of usage glove box, but I would not recommend to run very different type of experiments with the same glove box, because this may spoil your samples. Mm-hmm.
And what is the situation if you change a solvent? If you have glove boxes, then you want to change solvents, then you need to use a new one, or you need to clean it somehow. How does it work?
Usually not.
Okay. Dear colleagues, my name is Robert Kuhn. Could you hear me?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Just regarding to this glove box situation, because just in, I think in 2 weeks ago, we installed in a Research Center of Natural Sciences a new glove box from M. Brown. This was a commercial now. So it's really important by this all experiments, the experiments with lithium ion, also with commercial type, also this liquid electrolyte based cells, or even half cells, or any prototype cell, or even what is my topic is a solid state, so new generation batteries and the solid state electrolytes. You always have to work in a glove box. That's absolutely true. Even some part of the synthesis has to be done in the glove box, especially if you are working with, for example, solid state electrolytes or electrolytes. For example, for lithium cobalt oxide or for any other sort or type of electrode active material, practically you can cope and you can manipulate on the air, so an ambient atmosphere, but as it comes to contact with a certain type of electrolyte, doesn't matter which electrolyte or even lithium, you have to go into the glove box and you have to seal your samples, you have to handle the samples always in an inert atmosphere, which is not just a meaning of an inert atmosphere. If they are talking about, I was really not surprised, but okay, somehow surprised if I went to the institute in the research center for natural sciences and I asked for a glove box previously. And they said, okay, we have, but mainly filled with nitrogen. This is also inert, they say. But I said, okay, in this case, if you are working with metallic lithium and these compounds, nitrogen is not inert. So the only atmosphere we can use is argon. Very, very well controlled atmosphere regarding also oxygen and the humidity. Both must be below 0.1 ppm. And a really good glove box, which is basically the price of the glove box again, a gas purification system for trapping traces of nitrogen. This is again really at several 10,000 euros. This is the only equipment what we did not have at this moment, but is also planned to get this somehow. So if we are not working so much with the lithium surface, so we're not interested, for example, in the reaction between the elemental lithium and other compounds, then the traces of the nitrogen can be eliminated if you are purging so much and regularly your box. And do not let accumulate nitrogen from just putting in and putting out things from the glove box. But definitely, it must be a well-defined environment. And for the question related to the solvents, it is also not that critical because you have in each glove box, and HPA is a HEPA filter for small particles and also for organic compounds. This is like a series, a basic equipment to filter out those vapors and gases. So if you are working, we also work with different solvent or with different electrolytes, ethylene carbonate, diethylene carbonate, vinylidene carbonate, with lithium hexafluorophosphate or even toluene, cyclohexane. There was no problem at all. Of course, we are not dealing with liters or really huge amount like a barrel of this stuff. You're always working in glove box with small amounts, several hundred microliters, several milliliters. So in this case, it's not a big deal. The biggest issue is the humidity, oxygen, and nitrogen, and this must be kept on a very low level.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Nitrogen is a problem with lithium batteries, but is it really the same difficulty with the sodium batteries?
The nitrogen is only a problem because it reacts with lithium and then gets lithium nitride, which is okay. Lithium nitride is a good ionic conductor. It's I think the decomposition voltage is about 0.4 something volt. But if you want to have a really pure, so in a molecular sense, pure surface between the lithium metal and your, for example, solid state electrolyte, that there have been so many bad things, of course, also in the solid state batteries, then you have to secure and provide a really chemically clean surface.
Yeah, okay.
But of course, you can cope with it. Just a last remark, in a physical cleaning of the surface. So, for example, with a small instrument or the tool in the glove box, you can polish your surface and then use freshly. This is also fine. So it's not, it must not, not, should not be overstressed, of course.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions, colleagues? Comments? No one in the chat window. No new comments.
Some question more. Can you specify maybe fundamental tasks from your point of view for research? Because when you are developing such kind of physics, for neutron research, there are two directions whether you satisfy the requirements of the industrial people, which want system very close to the practical one, or you start to study more physics inside, more science, I would say, in this sense. So what do you think the task for this, for the latter direction, fundamental science in lithium-ion batteries research from your point of view?
Who should answer this question?
Yes.
Yeah, of course you.
No, well, I am just the guest person here, so ask the neutron guys what to do.
I mean, the fundamental physics from the studies of this type of batteries. I mean, not neutron physics. What is your interest? I mean, what do you recommend for such type of studies?
I would not specify any. This is just a brainstorming event for me. Mm-hmm. And once the community decides that we should indeed get involved in the project, then we will specify them. But I would not tell any at this moment.
Yeah, okay. Good.
Yeah,
political answer.
Yeah, from the neutron point of view, the most exciting question is to build some kind of an equipment which can be studied by neutrons. Of course, that's what you said.
Yeah, but this is the end.
We are not expert in batteries. That's another part of the problem.
Yeah. So this meeting is just merely to bring people closer together with.
Yeah, but
very dissimilar
about challenges in this kind of physics and the lithium ion batteries. What is for? What kind? What our or any other research can help in which direction that can be help? Because now the level is so high in the knowledge about the processes, it will be rather tough task to find new steps. In which direction you should apply your equipment?
I don't think that we should we ourselves should define these questions. The international community that might be involved in such research has a like far-reaching personal connection till the industry, and I myself would prefer if we know the key questions where the industry goes. What I feel in my basic research for quite a while is that I am very far and too far from the industry, and the questions which are obvious for, say, leading Western laboratories that work in a close cooperation with industrial people are not known to me, and it's not only because of the technical facilities I am a little bit impaired, but because of the ignorance of the important questions on where the industry goes and what are the actual problems of the laboratories where the market-oriented development takes place. So I would say that defining questions merely because of our scientific interest would not lead us too much ahead, but there should be people from industry involved who see the development processes which are not even known openly to the entire scientific community.
Thank you. It's understandable point of view.
Yeah, in 2007, Grünberg and Fert got the Nobel Prize in Physics for giant magnetoresistance and related subjects. And in 2019, this lithium-ion battery. So it, and in between, I don't know the year, the lead got the Nobel Prize. So therefore, it looks like that science goes in the direction of how to be useful for our life. So okay. So if there are no more questions,
just one reflection for your last remark.
Yeah. Okay.
Just take a look at how fast the development or the discovery of the giant magnetoresistance penetrated to the industrial level.
15
They sold the patent nearly immediately, and it was involved to the production level or the production related development level. And what we learned from the subtle details of the giant magnetoresistance effect just came much after, once it became a routine part of the computer devices. And this is why I am telling that a close contact with the industry is a must. For such a process, because we aim at something that is well known around the world, that on which 100 people teams are working in leading laboratories. So we should not start from the basic or the beginning level, but we should get involved to the mainstream. And this is why I am telling that industrial relationships for such a project is a must.
Yeah,
I agree with this, but you have to also consider that we would like to give a possibility for people who are close to industry to come to us and to be able to study whatever they want. So that's a different kind of direction what we want to do as a neutron scientist. So then, but we have to have a partial understanding of the process, but we I am not sure that we want to be the developer of the greatest accumulators of the world.
Yeah, we'll see. So this seminar series is to find out whether we want to we should be users or scientists. Serving measuring services or giving measuring services to the users, or being involved as scientists. So I think this has to be decided at the end, sometime at the end of this year.
And it can be in between if we are able to attract some leading scientists in the battery business, then we can work together closely.
Yeah, okay. So I think this is coming to the end of the discussion. Thank you very much for so many of you joining in. And in 2 weeks' time, we will have another of this series by Robert Kuhn. The subtitle is not clear yet, but he will talk about the new trends in this science and development. So thank you very much.